Hello and welcome to The Undermind, a podcast about AI development for StarCraft Brood War. I'm your host Shonko, I make computers do things. Let's begin. Hello and welcome. My guests today are Hannes Bradberg, a returning guest.
Hello.
A new guest, Nightcat.
Hello, I'm the author of the bots Nightcat T and Nightcat P, that just Nightcat T participated in the recent SSC AIT. I've also worked on Diablo API, or DAPI, as I like to call it, to allow artificial intelligence development in a action RPG setting.
And Adam Heinermann.
Hi, I'm the current owner and overlord of the Brood War API project.
And let's do the introductions, and I would like to ask you to elaborate on that. The Brood War API, where it all started. We would like to know the full story and the details, the hardships, the blood, sweat and tears. Tell us everything.
Sure. So, a long, long time ago, in, I think, 2008, or sometime around there, the user Covarex started the Brood War API. So he started the Brood War API. It was kind of a mess at that time. Bots were actually written in XML. And there were a couple other developers on the project as well. I joined maybe within a year, working on sort of the low-level hacky Brood War interfacing stuff. We all just worked on this API. At some point, Covarex left to go make Factorio, and a user by the name of Lower Logic joined the project and worked on the Brood War API 3, which is kind of the API that people know about. Like, when you think of the Brood War API, you're going to think of version 3 and beyond. That's when, you know, it became more of an API and not, you know, XML files and ridiculous things like that.
Can't even think how did that work. But feel free to elaborate on the technical details. How did the idea came out, and what did you do? I'm genuinely curious, what are the tools you used for this?
What do you mean by that?
Like, if I wake up one day, okay, I want to build an API for StarCraft, how would I begin?
Oh god. Well, you would first need to be able to interface with the game, and that means being able to hack into it in various ways. So you need to know, like, all the internal structures and enumerations and data types and memory locations and how to hook into those, and you need the context of how the game works. So most of the stuff I reverse engineered, and I used all that information to add to the Brood War API. So the current day API, Brood War API 4, we actually treat StarCraft memory as if we own it. So, you know, it's a DLL, it's injected into the process, and we pretend that we own the StarCraft memory, and we hook into a few functions to get ourselves in there, and we just read the memory and call StarCraft functions in the Storm library as if it were our own.
But what are the plans for BW API? What will you add next, if any?
So there's a whole design for the Brooder API 5, which Newbie and I have been working on. And I recently I was pinged by the Facebook people. That kind of motivated me to push for development again, because there was this period of not working on anything until recently. So the Brooder API 5, the fundamental design of it is to tackle most of the issues in Brooder API 4 that are most of the substantial issues, like cross-compiling with different compilers, and you know, hooking into or using the same interface to hook into OpenBW and StarCraft Remastered, sort of unifying that. There's also huge backwards compatibility issues in the Brooder API 4 design, so I'm trying to tackle that as well.
Also, if I can interject that, there's also a big concern from people about things like unit IDs revealing a little bit too much information in-game, which will also hopefully be addressed with this update.
But the general structure will remain the same, like the same entry points into the game and objects we are accustomed to. I should use simple words.
Yeah, the APIs that people are accustomed to should remain the same. So there wouldn't be too much effort to update the bot. But we hope to have backwards compatible interfaces so that you don't necessarily need to update your bot.
What's the compatibility range on that? Which is the earliest version which can be compatible with VW API 5?
So we would have to compile a conversion interface for each version that we wanted to support. So it should be able to go, so if we build that interface for any particular version, it should work for any version.
Yeah, but that's kind of a stopgap solution, because you won't be maintaining actively the older versions, right?
So the older versions, so the way the Brooder API 5 is supposed to work is through protobuf, so the client and the actual Brooder API, the client and server, this is going to be a client and server, and they're going to be separate things. So having a thin interface for an older version shouldn't be much of an issue, I don't think.
Well, thank you for your work so far, and I hope this will be a very successful project. And this was a pretty long introduction, and I would like Nightcat to do the same and speak about himself and his bot a little bit more. As I heard, the Nightcat is one of the only bots, or maybe the only bot, who can play team games and not just tailored to the one-on-one format SSEAIT and the tournament uses.
Yeah, and that's speaks to one of the design things that I had, or design philosophies that I had in mind when I started working on the bot, was just that I didn't want just to stick to the one-on-one scene. I wanted to do what was fun for me. So, you know, I came from playing Brood War mainly just with friends, not really competitively one-on-one. And so I wanted something that, you know, we would be able to play against in different types of scenarios. So I tried to build my bot to be able to handle as many different situations as it could, such as, you know, team games or free-for-alls. And I would like to say that there are other bots that can handle those situations. They just don't necessarily handle them well. That's not to say that my bot handles it well either. But for instance, like, something that is a bit unique to my bot is that if it does have allies on its team, if they're under attack, it will try to send an army to help defend. It doesn't really do any coordination with attacking, though, at this time. And there's no real way to talk with it. But it, at the very least, it will try to help you if you're dying to something. So the bot is mainly made from scratch, and over time I did add a few libraries. It's currently using the Igor version of Bwem. I believe I had plans to convert it over to Community Bwem, but I haven't done that yet. And it also uses the FAP library for some combat simulation. But starting, I will say that starting a bot from scratch is a lot of work. It's a very different approach than the one that Locutus took, which is throw all of the libraries together and then start making your tweaks from there, which isn't to say that that's not a lot of work either. It's just a different set of work, because you're starting with a base and then making changes, whereas you have to build the whole, well, almost the whole base from scratch, because terrain analysis is really complicated. So Bwem came in early. But that was a lot of fun to work on. It's not very competitive. I think on Basil, it's like at the Terran version of it is at like a 50% win rate or so. And I haven't updated it since March, but that's mainly because I've been working on the Diablo API through the latter half of last year, which has spawned actually from Antigua. Antigua is a big old Diablo player. I played it when I was younger as well. And we wanted to have a different avenue than just RTS for AI development, because there's, as far as we know, there really isn't any... I mean, there are for like APIs for MOBA games, such as I think League of Legends has it, if I'm remembering right, or is it Dota 2, or maybe both. But either way, we wanted something where, like in an ARPG setting, there could be AI development as well, because it is a completely different beast. Pathfinding is, I found, to be a much larger item that you need to solve in that type of scenario. In a game like an RTS as well, if your particular bot gets stuck, as long as the other or opponent doesn't get stuck, you know, the game can still come to a resolution. But something like an ARPG, if your bot gets stuck firing an arrow at a wall or at a pillar because it doesn't realize that's there and the enemy is on the other side of it, then the game just stops, grinds to a complete halt. So it's a whole different breadth of problems that you need to figure out in that type of scenario. So that's definitely been fun to work on.
Actually, in the last episode, Antigua talked about the Diablo API in length, so the audience has some familiarity with it. I did not know that you were working on that too.
Yeah, I actually, it's right now, it's only been worked on by me. For about a year, I think the idea floated around. Antigua wanted it to happen. He started a Discord for it, and nobody jumped on to program it. So summer of last year, I was like, you know what? I have the time. Yeah, okay, I'll do that. And so I jumped on to do it, and it actually coincided, I think a week or two after I started to look into it. Because Heinemann said, you know, you have to do a lot of reverse engineering if you want to start working on an API for any game. And there are a lot of tools to help with that. But I really lucked out with Diablo because at the time, very shortly after I started it, a project got released onto GitHub called Devolution, which was actually somebody else's work on reverse engineering the original, well, not the original Diablo, but Diablo version 1.09's executable. And so that was a tremendous help to be able to have essentially the entire Diablo game reverse engineered into a Visual Studio project so I could look into exactly what's going on internally with Diablo and figure that out. And then the author of that was also nice enough to give me a list of memory addresses for functions and things like that. So it made development a lot easier than it would have been without those resources.
And what's the best result you got with the Diablo 1 bot so far?
It's been able to, so the idea behind the API was to get an Iron Man tournament going, which Iron Man is playing Diablo with a specific set of restrictions. Playing under that rule set, the furthest I've got a bot is to, I think, like the 7th floor or so of the game, and there's 16 floors total to clear in the game. But without playing those restrictions and having the bot just kind of play casually, with me occasionally stepping in if it gets stuck, say firing at a pillar, because line of sight is really weird in the game. But and also too, in that game, if you die, you drop all your equipment, so I would recover the equipment for the bot whenever it would die. But with those caveats in mind, I was able to get both a warrior and a rogue through to complete normal difficulty, and then they got about halfway through nightmare.
Sounds promising. Actually, speaking of action RPGs, just briefly, I played Path of Exile for a time, and there was this rumor that people are having armies of bots playing Path of Exile and just farming items. How possible do you think it is? If you know the game, that helps, but in general, do you think it's feasible? Would it worth it at all?
I'm not familiar with that game, pardon me, in particular, but I do know that Diablo 2 has had issues with botting. It's pretty easy to make a bot that, if you don't like restrict the information that the bot can have about the game that's going on, then you could pretty easily make a bot that can accomplish a very specific goal, such as, you know, starting a new game, going in, killing a particular enemy, looting it, and then either, you know, possibly vendor selling trash or selling vendor trash rather. And keeping really good items and things like that. It all depends on the producer of the game and how hard they want to crack down on that type of behavior, and how good the people creating the bots are at hiding from any detection methods that the game developers might have. Dappy, for instance, Blizzard really doesn't care about the original Diablo game very much anymore, sadly, with Battle.net for it being down as of sometime last year and never coming back up. But Dappy makes no efforts to hide itself from any detection if there were in Diablo, which as far as I know there isn't. And it also restricts the information that's available to the bot, so you can't just like load up a game and know exactly where Lazarus is, for instance, to farm Lazarus. The bot would still have to go and find him. But if you wanted to, you could write a bot that would be able to know exactly where he is, go straight to him, kill him, and pick it up. So the game you're referencing, it could be possible. Like I said, it depends mostly on how well the publisher wants to stomp out that type of behavior.
Interesting. So there is a not too ethical business case there if someone really wants to do it. Alright, regarding Blizzard, I have a question about BW API. I asked this before, but I'm always prodding and curious about it. Has there been any official response about BW API recently from the side of Blizzard?
Yes, actually. They posted their current roadmap, and the Brood War API is on that roadmap.
Wow, that's sounds really great.
It's low priority for them, but it's still on there. So, Yeah, I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to talk about, because I did go there one time and I did sign an NDA, so.
And we, well, as long as there is hope, that's enough for us. I mean, I imagine at first there was no official support at all. Or, I'm curious, how was PWAPI received in the first place? Was there any hostility towards it?
No, I don't think there was any hostility towards PWAPI at any point. Because, it was founded on sort of academic, or an academic premise. And I know these tournaments have been getting prizes from Blizzard too, so.
That's good to hear. And how did you decide on some issues that relates to the games? Like, okay, let me rephrase that. How did you decide how much information a bot can have? I recently published an article titled "Human Games Are Not Bot Games," and it's a polarizing issue, and of course people disagreed with me, and that's fine. What was the design philosophy behind that when designing BWAPI?
So can you repeat part of that again?
How much information do you give to a bot? What was the intent behind that? How did you decide that?
The information to a bot is mostly limited based on the player's vision. So as long as you can scroll anywhere in the map and be able to click on something, you get most of that information. There are some contentious pieces of information. I know one of them is cloaked units. So we, kind of give some information that a cloaked or burrowed unit exists in a space. And the one reasoning behind that was that a professional player could notice distorted pixels in a location, and that was I think the reason behind that. And then some people disagree with it, but that's the way it is right now. There's also some other information which actually isn't supposed to be there. I think it was covered in a couple of issues that were raised. And then there's some other information like attack frames and stuff, like which attack frame a unit is in, which is also a little disputed, so.
I'm curious to hear the thoughts of the other guests as well.
I think that one of the main points of discussion I've seen right now about information is mostly related to enemy units and orders, so that you're able to see exactly which unit your enemy units are targeting, where they're casting their psi storms and everything like that. I don't know if anyone else here has any thoughts on that and what could be done in that area.
I mean, one comment on that is I know something that the McRave bot uses to its advantage is the target of enemy orders, because I think, if I'm remembering right, or did he do it some other way? Haynes, you might remember this better. To figure out where a spider mine is targeting, or which dragoon a spider mine is targeting, so he can drag that mine into enemy tanks.
Yes, I remember he's used that, but I don't remember exactly which functions he was using, but it is possible to use the API to see which unit a Widow or a Spider-Mine is targeting.
Yeah, so that's something that, I mean, you might be able to infer it as a human if, for instance, you have a unit that's standing alone enough by itself, but if you had like a pack of Dragoons, you might venture a guess that it's going after the closest one, but that might not always be obviously apparent to humans. So I could see, you know, there being some debate around, well, should that piece of information really be available, or even tanks necessarily. And this maybe more goes to a video that I've seen on the StarCraft 2 API, where you have a group of Zerglings running after some tanks, and they're able to spread out because they know exactly which Zergling is going to get hit in order to minimize splash damage. And while we haven't seen that yet, I don't think, in a Brood War bot, if you can get the target of that siege tank, I imagine somebody could build behavior like that to try and minimize those type of things.
The problem with doing that thing in Brood War is that Brood War has turning rage, which are way more prevalent than in StarCraft 2, and also usually quite a lot higher latency. So I don't even think that it would be possible to get any kind of value out of that, sadly.
I think there could be value. It's just, I don't think we should be providing the targets that enemy units are going toward, because even as a player, all we know is that an enemy unit is moving. So
exactly, like when you have your bio army and you see your enemy starting to cast their psionic storm, and you can like start dodging it before it's even cast, I think that's a problem, to be honest.
Yeah, like it might be good to be able to see, because there is an animation associated with it, so it might be good to know that, you know, that particular Eye Templar is about to cast, but knowing where it's going to cast as a human takes intuition. So for a bot, that should probably take intuition.
Yeah, exactly. And you can still infer the location somewhat from the angle, but you shouldn't be able to tell at which exact distance it is casting its Ice Storm.
Yeah, but isn't the animation for Psionic Storm and Hallucination the same? So if you just see the animation, you can't conclude that this will be a storm 100%.
Oh, you should have Antigua here. I have no idea on that question. Possibly.
I think there is caster units have just one animation for casting. I'm like 75% sure of that.
Every unit uses the same animation for casting any ability.
Okay.
So yeah, this is something that that maybe shouldn't be visible, but mind dragging and mind targets are something, maybe just something that bots do better than humans, and we have to live with that.
Well, yeah, the bots will be better at humans at some things. Humans will be better at bots at generalizing pretty much, and there are still things that humans see in game, like they can hear units outside of visions, which bots can't do at the moment.
Wow, I did not know that was a possibility. Let's discuss the first elimination round of the SSCIT tournament, because we have the results. I think it's not that much surprising, but still there are some interesting places. Well, let's just start from bottom to top. On the 16th place there is Thomas Vaida, which is genuinely surprising, as I think it wasn't updated for years, but I might be wrong on that. It's the carrier bot. It's just a one base carrier, and that's it.
I think one of Thomas Vaida's strengths is the fact that it hides behind a good set of cannons. So, you know, I'm not entirely surprised that it's still in the top 16, and also that it's placing down towards the bottom. It shows that, you know, we're getting newer bots that are showing better strengths and able to handle the things that Thomas Vaida exploits. But, you know, one of the things, like, for instance, if you're Terran going against Thomas Vaida, you really need to know and understand how to use siege positions and siege tanks against cannons. Because if you just rush in with a bunch of M&M, they're going to get destroyed. If you rush in with a bunch of M&M and tanks and don't protect the tanks, they're going to get destroyed. So what Thomas Vaida does isn't necessarily weak, but you just have to be at a certain level to be able to understand the situation and be able to take it out.
Well, I don't think it's weak by any means. It's just it's a strategy that you can know in advance and counter it. And surprisingly few bots did just that.
Yeah, and then there's also the factor that people just look at Thomas and they just think, oh my god, that's such a silly bot. And then they like don't bother with handling it properly at all.
The same thing goes for Eric Hammer and Andrew Smith. Both are other bots, if I recall correctly. Or did Andrew Smith receive an update? The SSEIT website is down, at the, not down, but just the bot list is not visible at the moment. So I actually don't see the time of the updates.
If you give me 2 minutes, I can take a look.
Alright, let's talk about things for 2 minutes. Eric Hammer is... Is that a fork of Steamhammer, or is it the other way around? I always confuse that.
I think Arakhammer is a fork of Steamhammer.
Yes,
Steamhammer. Like from an older...
Yes, Steamhammer is Jay Scott's bot, and it got forked a lot of times.
Yeah, I think the forking relationship goes the UAB bot to Steamhammer, and then... there's a number of Steamhammer forks, such as Iraq.
It's getting more convoluted than the relations in the soap opera.
Pretty soon we'll need a 23andMe for StarCraft bots.
Oh yeah. Yeah, actually, we briefly discussed the idea that we announced the new Locutus forks in a Jerry Springer show style, but I decided against it. Maybe we could gain some short-term popularity with it, but...
I think someone actually made a tree from all of the forking of bots, but I can't recall who made it or anything like that.
Yeah, we will find out. And on the 13th place there is Proxy, who is a relatively newer bot, I think, and it got updated to the tournament. Also, it's a Zerg bot. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm really afraid I confused two bots, and that's not good. And after that, Haupan and Steamhammer. Haupan has been steadily advancing for the last year or the last few months, and that's good to see. Haupan is constantly improved. I think Antiga mentioned that he consulted on it. Please correct me if I'm wrong again.
I think Antiga said that in one of the past episodes. Yeah, Haupan has been great to see getting better, because I remember when it initially came on the scene as a fork of one of the AIIDE versions of Ironbot, the changes that were made initially to it absolutely tanked it. And then just since then, it's been getting steadily better, and it's been awesome to watch that process.
I wonder if it's open source. Oh yeah, so after Haupan, it's Steamhammer, which 11th place, which is very nice. Another bot that gets better and better and managed to get in the top bracket. I think that's an achievement in itself. And then TSC Mu Protoss 2. I don't know, that haven't been improved lately, right?
I think there was some improvement or update posted sometime last year, but I don't can't remember when exactly, but I know it has the two at the end of its name just because the original version of it was crashing on SSCAIT, and we couldn't really determine why. We thought maybe the learning files had got too large, but when the learning files were cleared out, it was still crashing, and so the author just re-uploaded it as TSC MOOP 2, and it worked. So we don't know what happened there.
The ladder can be strange at times. So after that, Microwave in the 9th place and Bereaver on the 8th. Those are also long time contenders. And I think they usually stay around the 10th place, above or below, but usually that place. I remember Bereaver not being updated for a while, so it's still a good boat. And that and after that, Killer Bot, which I think one of the longest non-updated bot, and it just got a new version shortly before the tournament, and another Zerg. So that's good to see. And did you watch any of the games, or did you watch a lot of games?
I watched more towards the beginning of the tournament, and as the tournament continued on, my viewership dropped off a bit.
Yeah,
I haven't.
Yeah, and there were 5,000 matches, so that's, I don't expect anyone to sit through all that. And also, I don't want to discuss individual matches. Let's just leave that to Nepeta. I think he does it better. And on the 6th place, it's Crazy Oprotos with the Cannon Rush bot. Cannons into DTs into carriers, I think, or some other troll build. Hannes, I think your throne as the Troll King is threatened.
Well, yes, I would be very sad if actually he somehow came up with a strategy to mind control ghosts or STVs and start nuking people. Then I would actually have a really big problem upon my sleeves, but as long as I'm the only one nuking, I'm feeling kind of safe.
Yeah, be careful. You should work on counter strategies.
I absolutely should, and I should just improve my nuking in general.
Nuking and fire bats, right?
Nuke drops and fire bat drops.
Yeah, I think that's the best. And so the first five is Banana Brain, which who I interviewed last week, or the week before that, depending on how you view it. And Purple Wave, yeah, Golden, which is awesome because as everyone knows, Dan is actively working on Cherry Pie, so how he managed to find the time, I don't know. Third is Iron Bot, second is Locutus, and the first is Seda. Well, the first place is not that surprising, since Seda has a whole team behind him or her or it, but I think Locutus is just behind in like 5 wins or 10 or something like that. Actually, Locutus was in first place for a while, so the difference is very, very little. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm not surprised with Saida on top when, you know, vultures and bath, as people say.
They weren't always saying that.
Yeah, they just started saying it when Flash came on the scene, I think. But no, I think that is a good crop up at the top five, in all seriousness. You know, all of those authors have worked hard to get their bots to the state that they're in, including the team behind Saida. And I think Saida also, I think it's been mentioned on the podcast too, that they have pro gamers that they have consulted for their bot as well. And I think there was a YouTube video that was posted somewhere on the Discord community of Saida actually taking a game off of a pro gamer or an ex-pro gamer. which was pretty interesting to watch. I think it was more a situation of the ex-pro gamer just underestimated the bot. And that's something that I think can happen a lot, even with Terran Crazio, because I know if I play games against it and I let it get set up and don't really cheese it and just try to play it straight up, its macro will run you over. I think that we got a pretty expected top five in this tournament.
Yeah, no big surprises there.
I'm a little bit sad to not see MacRae, though. I think that there's a pretty good chance you could have ended up in 16th place, and as far as I understand, it didn't really make it because it's weaker to a lot of the other bots, but in this kind of a bracket, I think it would be very competitive, and maybe even could eliminate Saida in the first round.
That's interesting. I think MacRae said something about committing a last minute change, which brought down his win rate.
Just like last year.
Just like last year. History repeats itself. Yeah, I'm very curious of the elimination rounds. I'm waiting for it with great anticipation.
Yeah, there is one thing that I wish tournaments such as SSC AIT would do, where they have like a round robin prior to an elimination tournament, that I think might hold back bot development just a little bit. In that, if you're playing in a tournament and you're in a round robin situation, you have a different mentality than you do in a elimination style match, and the bots have to take both rounds the same mentality, because they don't have any way of knowing, you know, what their situation is outside of that one individual match. And so I wish there was a tournament or that offered a way, like whether it was through some type of file that could be read or something, so that a bot could go, oh, I'm in the round robin phase right now, oh, I'm in an elimination phase right now, and it's, you know, game three. And bot authors could maybe work to do that on their own a little bit, but with a tournament like SSC AIT, if you don't know how many participants they're going to be until registration closes, you can't program your bot to say, oh, after I've played 100 games, I'm going to be in an elimination mode, because you don't know how many opponents you're going to have. And so I think it would be really cool to see something where somebody could have, you know, like it's used a bot that uses more safe builds in the round robin phase in order to get those wins to get the top 16. And then maybe once it's an elimination, we see it start using something crazy like, you know, a four pull out of nowhere to try and take an opponent off guard, which are things that humans do in tournaments like this.
So basically metagaming the tournament.
Exactly. And that's something that, you know, I think it restricts what authors are doing with their bots and what builds are viable. I remember seeing a discussion where the Cherry Pie team was stating that, you know, there are certain builds for Zerg that just aren't viable in these type of tournaments because you can't afford to lose. In particular, in the ZvZ matchup, there's only like a couple of builds that they feel safe using because of that.
Yeah, certain kind of tournament formats will always prefer certain kind of bots. Not surprisingly, there is no one size fits all solution for this. By the way, Adam, did you have a bot after working on BW API for quite some time?
No, I've never had a bot.
Do you plan to maybe change that?
I've been thinking about it, but I don't have the time right now.
And did you think that the tournament scene or the StarCraft bot scene will be this big later when you started?
I mean, I'm actually surprised it's been becoming bigger. I thought it would peak at just SSCAIT. But it keeps popping up everywhere, so maybe?
I would argue that it's getting more and more popular in the recent maybe year or 2 years. How do you feel about that?
I think it's pretty interesting. So maybe I'll consider working on a bot, but there's still a lot of things I need to learn before I start.
I think one appeal to crafting a bot for BW API is that it's another, if you look at your bot as an extension of yourself, it's like another way of learning to play the game. So, you know, as a player, if you enjoy playing Brood War, but, you know, maybe you can't get that 300 APM perfect decision-making, you know, S-rank league type of play out of yourself, you know, if you're decent enough at coding, take a stab at trying it from a bot perspective. Maybe you can get a bot that, you know, could be top 16 in SSC AIT. That was one of the things that appealed to me as I was working on my bot was, you know, as I started to get my bot to be a bit better, I was like, you know, it felt more like I was getting better at the game as well in a way, even though my own play really wasn't, but, you know, the bot being an extension of me, looking at it that way.
That's a very good point that a little bit hit home because, well, I'm not a great Brood War player. I was decent back in the day, but I'm a really bad player right now. So, yeah, my bot will be better than me. The apprentice will outgrow the master, I guess.
And I have never had any ambitions of making my bot competitive at all.
What were your ambitions then?
My ambitions were just to get a lot of nukes dropped as entertainment for the stream and just making bot development for everyone else a lot harder just because they now have to dodge nukes. And I basically have to put no effort into them doing a lot of things.
So basically malice.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the thing that moves the world forward. Oh yeah, and someone said once to me that you won't be playing this for in 20 years. But technically, I'm not playing. I'm not the one playing it, but you know.
And something I just thought of, based on Haynes's motivations, there really aren't. Like, there's a large number of Protoss bots that are forks of some other Protoss bot, and there's a fair number of Zerg bots that are a fork of some other bot, but there's very few Terran bots that are forked off of other Terrans.
Well, there is Haupan.
Yeah, there's Haupan, and that's it. Maybe you could consider... what's the SCV Rush bot's name?
Stone?
Yeah, you could maybe consider Stone... kind of a fork because that was Iron, or that's the same author as Ironbot, and he just modified it to only do SCV rushes. But because I was thinking, like, why didn't Haynes fork a bot and just add nukes to it if that was his goal? But then I stopped and thought about it. Was like, there really aren't many Terran forks.
Mainly because Crazio does not like open sourcing his bot.
It's not that I didn't have anywhere to start. Like, I think there was an iron source from not that long ago. I just, like, spent my afternoons programming in the cafeteria at my university, and I just wanted to build something from scratch because that's what I do, that's my thing. I, like, take a look at something, and then I tear it down, and then I build it the way I want it. That's basically what fuels my... basically anything when it comes to coding.
There is always that hope that you invent something better than the last 50 years of researchers combined.
Like, that's pretty much why I do it that way. There's a chance that I make something much better than there already is. I haven't, like, done it yet, but I think that's the way to do true innovation, at least.
I did my bot from scratch too, and yeah, pretty much my reasons for doing so as well, and not the least because I actively enjoy doing it. Thanks for being here today. I think we had a lot of insight into the history of BW API, and we are eternally thankful for it. And see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for watching, or listening, I guess.
One of those.